Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome back to PZ85 Plays. I am your Game Master, Double H. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, we returned to the Star Wars Dawn of Defiance campaign for Episode 8. Cody said before the show started, we're in the endgame now. And with that in mind, let me briefly introduce your cast. Son 1, we'll get to that in just a second. I mentioned him already. He is our current, at the least for the moment, resident Jedi playing Kruskog Zubane as Cody Santa.
Who is John Caffey in the Beaver Brown Band? Thank you very much. I'll take him animal sounds for 800, Alex.
Simply stunning. Iris Nay is played by Lindsay Wolfgang.
Hello.
And of course, Hirani Tar, played by our co-owner and creator of Podzilla 1985. It's the White Phoenix, Shannon Young.
Well, there it is.
You gotta do the mouth.
Well, I'm gonna get that GIF. No. I'm gonna get that GIF. Yeah.
it is good to be back. I feel bad immediately because I was gonna say, you know, it's been so long since we've been on, and I remembered that's because we absolutely did a show like a month and a half ago that unfortunately you did not get to hear. It was just for us. As a brief aside, so the last time you heard this cast and this this game on this show, PZ85 Plays, was back in June. We wrapped up the second act of Dawn of Defiance with the end of Reckoning of Wraiths, which is episode 7 of 10. And when we did that, we took a brief break. We played a DD campaign, which we've done with Cody in the past. Anytime that we finish an act of Dawn of Defiance, Cody set up a 5e game for us, and it was all of us here, plus Tanner, plus for the first time, Kaz. Ari Casper was on the show.
Man.
He was here with us on plays.
Little punchy.
Playing a drunken, little punchy horse.
Little
a
punchy
drunken
horse.
Monk centaur. Did we upload any of that? Was the first episode up? Did you get to hear any of it?
Yeah, I don't. They didn't get to hear me on the show at all. Yeah,
that was the thing. Yeah,
I wasn't
because you were on the first round. Yeah,
which is crazy because I introduced a whole new character, which I heard was the best character, and his name was Big. No, not doing it.
I was sitting here going, "You played Rosenblood again." unfortunately that series has been lost to the archives. We had a ton of internet issues and all kinds of crazy stuff. We played and it happened and it was a lot of fun, and Cody did a great job and we all succeeded and won and it was fun. But it has been lost to the annals of time. So, I'm specifically mentioning all this because I want Cody to get the credit that he deserves. Real quick, let's give a quick shout out to Cody Sandusky. Let's go.
Thank you. Can't wait for you to go into the rap version.
Well, I guess,
big nasty bastard.
I guess I know.
No.
Take you waiting for that.
We'll be doing
the
Red Dead for the next week. Every time then it gets quiet.
Steven is going to be so confused.
He's going to cry with laughter is what he's going to do.
That's the best part. The first few times you do it, he'll be like, I don't understand the bit. You can hear him just, please tell me the bit. And then when he gets it, you'll hear him going. It's that little just in the back of his throat. Oh, it kills me. You will notice, as I alluded to earlier, we are missing one of our regular cast members for Dawn of Defiance, the Big T, the man himself, Tanner Calvert, is not with us tonight. We are hoping to have him back in the near future, hopefully as early as next week. We will let you know about that as soon as possible. Also, for however long we've been streaming, you may or may not be aware, this is not going to be a super long show tonight. Since we are starting a brand new act, the idea is really just to get you up to speed on the campaign and what's going to be happening in this first episode back. Of course, you saw the crawl there, episode 8, the final act. This is Act 3, and this is the first episode of Act 3. It's called The Gem of Alderaan, which will be explained very shortly.
Would you like to read that for the people that weren't with us live?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's a good idea. That's something I can do. However, I'm going to have to do it differently. So this is one of the first times, just to pull back the old curtain, as we say, a bit, that I did not... used the pre-generated crawl. So there is, let me hit the edit text and I can just read it. So there is a crawl that is in the module for this, and I used the gist of it, but I went through and changed it a significant amount. So I couldn't, I just pulled up the module and I was like, oh, I'll read it from that. That's not what you saw. Our version, the PZ85 Plays version of the Gem of Alderaan's crawl reads, "The Galactic Empire is stronger than ever. Months after the destruction of the Rebel frigate Resurgence, the crew of the Midnight Coterie finally learn that Jedi Master Denia is being held captive on a fortress world in the Deep Core. It will be impossible to reach her in time without codes to allow safe passage. According to Senator Bail Organa, a celebrity heiress has such codes, and Hirani Tar, Iris A, Kruzkog Zubane, along with Sigurd Talon and Graz, and their shipmates must seek her aid while hiding in plain sight from the forces of the Empire." That is the official crawl for the episode. There he is. There's Mr. Pina in the... Nice. I was going to say flesh, and that sounds wrong. In the...
metal?
Cody, me out. Cody, do it!
Hey, Cody!
Cody, go!
I completely missed what happened. I was laughing too much. I'm sorry.
Balin.
He looked like you hit me with that Ron Swanson Godspeed and just run.
I was so focused on Mr. Peanut, I completely missed Balin being a part of the conversation.
Balin. Yeah, when I say shipmates, okay, we mentioned the bulk of them, but Shannon now has a coterie of sinister intruders of his own. You've got Hirani Tar, you've got, who I did not include, beyond Hirani, the people I didn't include, Narada, his original minion, his latest one, who I'm going to allow him to introduce. I don't think we ever gave a name up to this point, or if we did, it was very brief.
I don't know. So he'll be introducing in the future. I re-listened to the last episode prior to this.
Okay, so Hunter, no name there. So we have another mysterious.
Hunter, I'm gonna be honest with you.
You never gave him a name.
No, I did. In preparing for tonight.
No, you did. I know the name.
Yeah, I'm good, because in preparing for tonight's show, I went, what the hell is his name? I know the last name. I can't remember the first name.
You can't remember the first one?
No, I remember his last name, but I cannot remember his first name.
I'm gonna give you a clue through Wayne's World, because there's a quote from Wayne's World that works for it. In French, it would be called La Renard. And they would be hunted for sport.
There it is. Thank you.
Because I told you, I know where that name comes from, and that's why you use that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when you hear the name, I think Cody may know where it's from, if he's a buff like us.
He will guess.
Yeah. And Kaz is going to know.
I got Star Wars stickers. Well, oh, you can't see
already
them.
Drained
the
my water.
There we go.
So I'll be right back.
Hey. Anyway, while she's doing that, yeah, you've got Hirani Tar.
Yeah.
You've got, of course, Graz is an NPC that I run for the entirety of this campaign, but he's an NPC, he's a DMPC. You got Graz up there helping her pilot. You've got Narada, his original minion.
Who's missing?
His latest minion. Right, who is missing in action. His latest minion.
Yeah.
Is, or his, I should be saying her. Her best friend.
Ripley.
Who's also missing.
Who's also missing.
And then both of her droids, Balin and Mr. Peanut.
Oh my god, yeah. What are the rest of us here for? Basically, it's Hirani and friends.
She has her own party. Like, I don't need any of you.
You do!
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, most of those things are so very squishy, Hirani herself included.
You could spit on them. You could spit on them and take out the whole group. Honestly.
Well, I mean, in these times, that's accurate for pretty much everybody.
Yeah, well. Yeah, so you guys didn't know we were going to introduce space COVID in this act.
Yeah, it's coming. It's here coming. Now.
But
yeah.
if you use Bantha dewormer, it will solve it.
No!
it's pronounced ivermectin.
Good lord.
Oh! Your faith in your horse dewormer is yours. Anyway, so let's see. I guess at this point, it would be most prudent to just like brief. We did this last week when we got on and did basically a preview for what was going on this week. But just as a quick recap, in case you did not catch up with it. Again, we're on Act 3, the final act of the Dawn of Defiance campaign, Episode 8. There's Episode 8, 9, and 10, and that's all you got. At this point, what you mainly need to know, if you need to know the whole story, you're going to have to go back to last week's show. But the gist of it for those who are just tuning in for the first time since June is that, as a brief reminder, the Resurgence has been destroyed. This was the Rebel frigate that the crew of the Midnight Coterie has been using for a long time now as a stop base, with Captain Verana at the helm, basically working as an intermediary for Senator Bail Organa. This is because it turned out that Admiral Varth, the Imperial turncoat they rescued way back in Episode 1, turned out to be a double agent. And so he led the Imperials to the Resurgence, which was under attack, which was ultimately destroyed. In the process, Jedi Master Denny was captured. That's bad. We also found out that not only did Crate Halen survive his seeming demise way back in Episode 4, if I remember correctly in terms of the numbers, but he has become an Inquisitor. He has fallen to the dark side. Inquisitor sorted him right alongside the man who he was facing, which is Inquisitor Valen Draco, both of whom apparently survived their seeming demise.
He's sodium.
He's so dumb.
They have captured. Oh, burr, burr, burr. They have captured Jedi Master Denia and taken her. That left us on a pretty dour note. You know, yes, the crew has discovered the not identity, but basically the full extent of the Sarlacc project, something they have been chasing way since back in Episode 1 and 2, finding that it is essentially, for those in the know, the project that will create the Super Star Destroyer. At this point in time, the Empire does not have that. And so the Sarlacc project is something that exists through back channels, and through a series of slave labor and lots of other, you know, dealings and black market moves to make a Super Star Destroyer happen. Mm-hmm. This is something that has to be stopped at all costs, but it can't just be brought out to light because there's no hard evidence and hard proof to do so. Not to mention, because the Empire now knows that these guys are at the helm of everything that has been problematic for them for quite some time now, they have their identities. They caught them on camera way back at the Amici Spire. The crew has death marks on their heads. So it's been a dark time since the end of Act 2. And in fact, as Act 3 is picking up here, it's been about 6 months. This is the longest time jump we've had since this began. The difference between Act 1 and 2 was 2 months maximum. This is a significantly longer jump. People have changed in that time. Of course, now I have the hiccups. This is great. People have changed in that time. And so with that in mind, as I mentioned last week, one of the first things I want to establish as we start in tonight is what our heroes have been up to in that time frame. I'll talk a little bit about Graz. I'm also going to mention Sigurd briefly in just a little bit. But since Shannon is, of course, the co-owner and creator of Podzilla 1985, let's start with Cody.
Yes!
Can you tell us a little bit about
it? You took it and made it better. Yeah.
Mother of all swerves, Russo.
Good. I think who's
the third man, Cody?
Who's the third droid?
Cody, I would... Oh, you're getting a third one?
I got the money. Hell.
Of course.
What are you going to get? A med droid?
That makes sense. Probably.
Did she say a metroid?
No,
a
she's...
I like it. Droid. I'm here for it.
I think she said a meth droid.
I heard metroid. That's pretty messed up right there. Cody, please, while I'm not dying over here, tell us about what Kruskog has been doing for the past 6 months since the end of Act 2. There it goes.
There you go. Kruskog has, more so than when the crew first encountered him on Coruscant, has drawn within. This entire sequence of events, not being so much directly connected with the Midnight Coterie and its crew until recent months, wasn't maybe so much affected, albeit still disturbed by seeing former Crade, now being an Inquisitor, now still being alive, seeing Valen Draco still be around. These things have shaken him to his core, alongside, maybe more so than anything, Master Denia, being the closest connection he has left to whatever life he aspired to be as a all things considered, relatively young Jedi. The one tether he had has now been taken once more. You know, this is someone who has been relatively recently recovered, being Master Dinia. So for Kruskong, this has been a brief moment of opportunity to connect back to the overall Force through such a potent individual. To now have that taken away has left him even more insular. He has been focusing a lot of his time on learning to sense the Force more, as best he can. As someone who has been trying his best, and through what training he's been able to hone of his own behalf, to hide in plain sight. Being on Coruscant as a Jedi is not a friendly situation, so he has been doing his best over the months leading up to these recent events, trying to contain his Force from being detected. He is now wanting to go to the other side of the coin. He realizes that lest he grow more capable in detecting others in the Force, not just in the overall sense you do as someone who's connected to the Force, being able to sense others, but truly be able to seek out, identify, and move toward other Force users or other Force-sensitive folks. That's the only way he feels as though he's going to be useful in finding Dinia. He's been doing, to give a little bit of flavor, I know I sent this to you, Hunter, one of the things that Kruskog has invested in is improved sense surroundings. Part of that comes into play, and far-seeing as well. Part of those come into being able to detect people that are concealed or covered in your immediate range. And Kruskog's big devotion right now is making sure that when next he encounters these people, they do not get the drop on them. In fact, he is seeking with everything in his power to be the aggressor, to be the one who gets the drop on these guys. He understands that no matter where they are going next, it is going to be the most hostile environment. And so everything in his being has been drawing within himself, trying to develop and hone his skills so that he can be a tool to get the job done. He started out on something through way of Bail Organa on Coruscant. He has seen some end to his work, but now it's become something that he wishes to not rest until that work is done. And so these 6 months on the ship, probably hasn't been talking to everybody beyond pleasantries, brief conversations at meals, trying to make sure that everybody's spirits are as neutral as they can be. He wouldn't be the person to be jovial and lift spirits anyway, but definitely not now. One, because he understands how everyone else is feeling. He can sense that. But also, he knows he himself is not in the place to be able to do that. So, as if he weren't mission-minded enough previously, coupled with the last few months of caring for these people and being a part of this group, he feels an even stronger devotion to get this job done. This empire must be stopped, and I must be a tool to do so.
Yeah, it may be surprising to learn, maybe even to Cody right now, that whereas typically Iris, we talked about last week, is kind of the leader, the de facto leader of the group, in the sense of she gets everybody together, she can coordinate attack plans. Irani is the face, but Iris kind of keeps the wheels turning properly. It's Kruskog, of all people, who has spent more time with the Rebellion, and with Organa in particular, in these 6 months than anybody else. We'll find out more about why in a minute, but it's Kruskog who would have stayed as close to Organa as possible, maybe not necessarily serving as an aide or security or anything, but just staying in close contact with him to ensure that they're working toward the same goal, that Dinia is not falling to the sidelines. And Organa has made it very clear along the way that that's never going to happen. But Kruskog's been burned before. You know, this would not be the first time that somebody had turned their back on the Jedi Order, especially with all the issues that have occurred since Order 66. So for him to stay in close contact with Organa means that that mission continues regularly, that getting Dinia back is equally as important, or treated equally as important, as ending the Sarlacc project and bringing the Empire down. It's all one interconnected thing. Each part creates the thing that needs to be done. With that in mind, Whereas Cruz Cog has grown closer and spent as much time as possible with the Senator on his home planet of Alderaan occasionally, sometimes on his personal transports. Of course, the Rebels still have not really worked out a new frigate. The Resurgence going down was a massive blow to them, and it's not as easy as just buying a new giant capital ship and setting it out there in space. So, especially with the current ongoing attempted dissolution of the Senate in general, Cruz Cog may be spending more time with them, but I will go ahead and sort of interject that Sigurd has gone the opposite direction. While he has not turned to the dark side, and Cruz Cog knows this, especially with his ability to, or his enhanced, I should say, ability to sense his surroundings and tap into the emotions and feelings of his people, Sigurd has withdrawn a little bit, and he has actually not been seen or heard from since the day after the Resurgence went down. Everyone finally got a chance to rest once they were safe and away from the wreckage and such. And once they were back up, Sigurd was gone. Cruz Cog can tell for certain that Sigurd is out there somewhere. He knows that he can feel his life force, but he cannot say for certain where or what he's doing. He's there. He has not turned to the dark side, but where and when, it's not clear, and he has not responded to any communication in that time frame. Someone else who went away for a period of time, and I'll let her tell the story, is Iris Ney. Lindsay, tell us what Iris has been up to these past 6 months.
So initially, she kind of hung around because she was feeling much more critical and wary of the rest of the Rebellion, other than her immediate group and Bail Organa and maybe a handful of people that they dealt with on a regular basis. Like, other than that, she pretty much kind of, like, pulled her trust away almost completely until things started to get slightly back in order after their lovely betrayal issues. Once she started feeling a little more comfortable about where things were sitting overall, though, she decided to take a trip back home to visit with her uncle and to just kind of rest and recharge a little bit away from everything. But while there, she didn't get to completely rest because her wonderful, loving parents appeared. And in their own way, which she saw right through, they were trying to fish up extra information that they themselves could turn around and resell through their means of work. But she also took the opportunity when they were trying to get information from her and failing to get out of them any news of what the Empire was up to or other groups that may be showing resistance to them that she could take back to help their efforts.
For a second there, I was really thinking that Lindsay was basically introducing a new sitcom starring Iris Ney and her parents. Iris Ney goes home when her parents show up. Hijinks ensue.
Everybody loves Iris. It's
wacky. You know, I watch too many 90s sitcoms reruns.
Yeah, with that in mind, that series of interactions between Iris and her parents is something that, like, maybe someday we're going to go back and actually get into, because I would love to play that out. Right. I want to see that happen. But for now, I actually need you to make me a couple of rolls. You can make these in whatever order you want to make them, but okay. I need from you a gather information check to decide what you discerned from them, what information you managed to glean, or Iris managed to glean from her parents, who again are, of course, Bothan spies in their own right. And then I also need you to make me I'll let you choose whichever one is better, a deception or a stealth check to determine how well you were able to prevent them from gleaning information from you.
It's the same bonus either way, so
let's go with really deception. Matter. I feel like it fits gather information better.
Okay.
If you don't have anything that makes a difference, if it's a wash, let's say it's a deception check.
Okay, well, I'm going to do my gather information first.
Okay.
And it's going to be a 32.
That's good. That's a good number.
Wait, are you rolling this on roll 20?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I have to actually be on roll 20 for its update. That's irritating. All right.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Sorry.
Okay. And then my deception roll is a 28.
Okay. Iris is reasonably confident that she was able to guard her secrets, keep her data pad on her at all times, that sort of thing. Let any slips of the tongue come out in conversation, so she's reasonably confident that she was able to maintain the status quo in terms of information. However, the student has outgrown the teacher, or so it seems. Iris does manage at some point in time through various means, conversations, certain words, certain key phrases slipping through, and a couple of, you know, quick checks in with a couple of your own informants to discover some pretty pertinent information. Something that I would assume will not yet be shared with the group, but I will tell you now. Actually, I'll tell you what. I'll send you a message and I'll let you share that information while Shannon is discussing what Harani Tar has been up to. Yeah, let's go to Shannon. Shannon, what's Harani Tar been up to for these past 6 months?
Oh boy. While everybody else is finding themselves and you know, starring in sitcoms with their parents and Brad Garrett, Harani Tar has blazed a war path across the galaxy. She's searching for Narada, she's searching for Ripley, and she and Graz have been hitting Imperial outposts and stations that no one, that she shouldn't know about, but, and I'll introduce the character now, thanks to the mystery person that we left off with. His name is Reynard Muldrake, and he is he's an Imperial agent, basically, a high-ranking Imperial agent, and he has been feeding them information, and Harani and Graz have just been taking that and just decimating outposts, and she has not hidden that fact either. She has become very ruthless in her tactics. When she hits the Empire, she wants them to know that she's hitting them. So it has just been, I don't want to say a bloodbath, because it's not like she's a stone-cold murderer, but she is not hesitating to get vicious when she has to. She's come up with no answer so far, but for the past 6 months, she has struck fear into the heart of the Empire because she seems to be one step ahead of them, and they don't know why. And so, she and Graz and Muldrake have been terrorizing the galaxy for the past 6 months.
It is, it's our Suicide Squad meets Guardians of the Galaxy, more or less. They're not criminals, but they're as violent as they can be. And they're, you know, they're lovable scoundrel rogues to a certain type.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say that Harani has absolutely in this definitely strained more relationships than she has bolstered. Oh, yeah. Clearly she and Graz are partners in crime, and of course the droids are along for the ride. Her minions are there with her. But there's been very little contact with the rest of the group in that time frame. Sigurd, of course, has been persona non grata, with Iris off, well, not off the grid, but with her family and gone to her home world, Bothway, for the record, is the Bothan home planet.
Bothway.
She has been mostly out of contact. And of course, Kruskog, actually, you probably had more contact with him than anything, because the new dynamic is basically Organa is the captain telling Harani that she's a loose cannon and she's not playing by the rules and she's going to have to turn her badge and gun in, basically. And Harani don't care one bit at all. It has been a very strained relationship. Now, of course, Organa knows at the same time that he can't afford to give up an agent who is willing to pretty much put her life on the line and do the kind of work that Harani is doing. But every single mission out is a you might not make it back, more so than ever, because again, death marks on these people's heads mean that it is shoot to kill on sight for Imperial agents if Harani Tar, Graz, or any of their associates are seen out and about.
And that's, you know, whereas other people have been hiding and trying to keep themselves cloaked so the Empire doesn't find them, she's almost daring them to find her. She's looking at every, you know, camera when she does this stuff. She started out as a star anyway. You know, she's addicted to the camera. She's a little bit arrogant and conceited. So she enjoys the attention, whereas before it was for good reasons. Now it is for very much, you know, the opposite. She is no longer, there's no longer a gray area for her in the public eye of why did she do what she did. She is now pretty much a terrorist. Like, everyone knows her, but not for the good reasons anymore. And one thing that I threw in as a little, and I want to remind everybody out there that in case you forget, she has a lightsaber now. And she has been putting that lightsaber to good use. And I believe it's a red saber, too, because it was from, wasn't it from an Inquisitor? Or at least one of their minions. So
Yes, it is.
She has been using that lightsaber and kind of feeling, she's feeling it. And I think Kruskog may actually be feeling her, because she's not doing good things. And she has something inside of her that is awakening, and she's not even sure what it is, but she just feels impelled to keep going. She does not trust the rebellion at this point. She does not trust the Jedi. In fact, she is defiant to the Jedi. She almost hates them. And she's using that hatred of everybody to fuel this mission of hers to find the only people that she actually cares about, and to hell with anyone that gets in her way. She's grown up, but maybe not in a good way. And
this is really where, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, and this is just a little thing I threw in because I thought it sounded cool. Because she, when she's not, you know, doing her warpath thing, this is just a little technical thing. I told Hunter about this. I just think it's a cool thing. I want you guys to know she has, because I ripped off Star-Lord. She has a pair of goggles. You know, if you look at her picture, she has a pair of goggles on her head. Well, these new ones that she's made up, whenever she puts them on and she hits a button, they just turn blood red, and it forms a face mask around her that she uses. She's almost become like a, almost like a legend, like a myth. The Imperials talk about this Twi'lek with the death mask that comes for them with the glowing red eyes. She is fully embracing this change. And she, even though she feels justified and vindicated in her actions, she also kind of enjoys it.
This is where the strain. So the obvious strain with the Jedi is the pull toward the dark side, for what it may be. For Organa, the issue is that she could put her own life at risk all she wants, but she jeopardizes the rebellion in general. If she were to be caught and ever compromised, then there's so much that could be pulled from her in terms of not just the party, but anyone else that she's ever had contact with. So this is where Organa has to constantly toe this line of, you know, it's dangerous to send her on missions, but sometimes she's the only person who's capable of it, along with her crew and the remaining crew of the Coterie. So it's just this constant back and forth of, you're the people I need, and yet you're the ones that are putting us most in danger at any given point in time. Graz has been just so hungry for 6 months. He hits that button all just, I am hungry. I am hungry. In between scenes of that, he's ripping off arms and he's busting down doors, blowing away with his bowcaster, chopping stuff up with that vibro axe. And then when he gets back to the ship, it's just immediate dead silence and I'm hungry. And that's it. That's all he's been doing.
It's not that Harani's pulling toward the dark side. It's that Harani's not feeding the strong boy. Strong boy needs a meal. Get the boys
He's just embracing his inner surprisingly.
Yeah, he doesn't really look any worse for wear as you would expect someone who is so close to someone who is trending towards some dangerous things. I mean, he's bigger and he's furrier and he's probably a little more scarred up than you've ever seen him. But that's just the running day, you know, run of the mill stuff, everyday stuff for him. So That's who he is and that's what he does. In fact, I would argue that probably Organa is not going as hard on Harani as he would have before, because remember, Graz was in his employ, because he knows that at any point in time he believes anyway, he could pull Graz right back in and say, okay, this is over, this is done. It's in the weirdest way, Graz is keeping Harani in check for Organa. He very much believes as long as he's there, it will never get completely out of hand. And so that's not a responsibility that Graz wanted or probably even knows about.
He just wants
he's
food.
He's not even cognizant of that a thing, of that being a thing. But he's just, he's a big, strong boy, and he's just there waiting to kill
hungry.
The next thing.
I will help.
He's the first mate. The Coterie, the Coterie is almost like a pirate ship at this point, because you've got, you know, Graz is the first mate. You got Harani. Again, the way I set it up, and Hunter okayed this, I believe, was that Harani full on blaster in one hand, lightsaber in the other, almost like a pirate with a, you know, a pistol and a sword. I mean, they fully embrace this lifestyle now, and whether she brought Graz into it or Graz always wanted to be that way, he needed the push to be full Wookiee. No one knows.
Yeah.
The lieutenant we killed last time did the same thing. She had a pistol and a lightsaber, but she got beheaded. So,
SA, is she still alive?
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's where her. That's where the similarities end.
That's it.
Now, she still rocks the same weapon gear, so.
It's a good look.
So 6 months in the span of this stuff happening, about 6 months has passed. The catalyst for these sort of side adventures coming to an end is the information that Iris gathers is enough for her to decide this has to get to Organa and it cannot be trusted over transmissions. It's got to get to him on a first in-person basis. So Bail Organa calls a meeting. He sends out the call to the members of the crew, whether it's the Coterie or the Coterie Extended. Kruskog, I would assume, is already there with him on Alderaan in his private residence. And Iris, of course, set up the call, so she's making her way back. I would assume just a light star freighter, probably by passage on something. He would have paid for it for you.
Discreetly, so.
Totally. Yeah, he would have. He wouldn't be as blatant as to just buy a ticket in the name of Iris Nay, but he covers the cost to get you back to him. But of course, the invitation is also extended to the Coterie and to Hirani and her crew. And so Graz, on the morning of the reception of this, wherever the Coterie happens to be, you tell me where the Coterie is. Graz is desperately trying to get in a like half sleepy way Hirani's attention. Just. He just keeps pointing at the screen. He's like shaking her.
I like to think that the Coterie is literally just in space, just kind of
drifting,
just drifting. And she's
a party ship at this point.
She's in the pilot's chair, just kicked back with her arms up, just staring like out into space because she's lost a lot. I feel like she is the most traumatized of the entire group after everything that's happened. Oh, yeah. So she's waiting for something, but she doesn't know what. And then Graz gets this.
So without, it's not so much that she's asleep and doesn't know that the message is happening.
She's just not looking.
She's just in this kind of trance. Just. And so finally Graz, he starts doing the like Tusken Raider shake, trying to get her attention.
Except he's holding like a bunch of sausage links because he wants to eat it before he does the message.
All that gold cuts.
The message is fairly straightforward. Once received, it's Bail Organa calling the crew back in, saying that he has pertinent information on the location of Jedi Master Denia, and that he needs your help.
Arani would immediately reply with "Don't care" and keep staring, but Graz gives her, because she doesn't care about the Jedi. She doesn't care about Denia, really. I mean, she was friends with Crade, and their indifference toward his disappearance really shook her. And then when Crade came back as an Inquisitor, that shook her even more. So she doesn't have this affinity for Denia that everyone else does. That's just an old woman to her. But Graz, because she does care about Graz, and Graz seems to be, he wants to go, so she goes.
Graz at this point is also pulling up like his no, it wouldn't be his data pad. He doesn't mess with it, but he would like grab hers and start. It's that thing where he pulls up the camera roll and starts going through the pictures of the crew and everyone that worked together. And he's kind of pointing at it like it's not just Denia.
Right.
It's everybody. It's the whole group. So agrees. Yeah, I would assume reluctantly, but eventually the ship takes off for Alderaan. Which is very weird saying that, because in my head I'm like, Alderaan's always been destroyed. No, it hasn't.
Right.
This is like years before that happens. Once Bail Organa gets the call that everyone's coming in, he has Kruskog set the table effectively, not literally, but of course figuratively, for everyone to meet together. Alderaan is exactly as beautiful as you imagine. It is very Earth-esque, so it's got the green rolling hills and the oceans and all that. Organa's place, his private residence, is well-maintained, well-staffed. It's very similar to Naboo. Like, it's the grown-up version of Naboo, so where it's less castles, but more of that type of architecture. You guys are all brought in uneventfully, basically. The coterie is given a landing pad designation. It's very nice. It's very close to the location of Organa's private residence. Again, this is home. This is not his office. You're not meeting him at the Senate. He has a home where they plan the meeting, but beyond that, this is a very homey situation. The meeting is set to take place within hours of arrival, and coincidentally, the freighter that is bringing Iris happens to show up on an adjacent docking platform and roughly at the same time as the coterie. So at the time that the coterie crew is disembarking, Iris is also making her way toward the palace, for lack of a better term, and the two of you would meet for the first time in some time, and I'll let you guys play that out.
I'll let Iris say the first words.
And go ahead and walk over to them, seeing that I don't think Harani's going to do it.
Groz is thrilled, and it will probably hurt you a little bit. He's very excited. He will need to be pried off within a moment. Okay. Yeah, that's what he does.
I'll take a Wookiee hug. Still,
he's very just like, you smell sausages. And it's not clear if it's his hands, his breath, or it's coming from somewhere else.
It's not a stroke.
It could be coming out any end of the boy, frankly. at this point, there's no telling.
Good Lord.
It's good to see you too, Groz.
Harani's just awkward. She's almost like the teenage daughter that is sitting in the back texting all the time at this point. She just kind of looks at her and says,
doesn't know how to interact.
Yeah, she's just turned awkward. She just looks, it's been 6 months of just bloodshed and, like, you know, carnage for her. She's been so devoted to this mission that to now come back to these people, it feels weird. It's like going back to see your family after not seeing them in so long. So she's just, you know, you look well. There. It is.
You look boffin today.
You look, you'll be an engineer one day, you know.
I bet you like chicken fingers.
Cool backpack, Iris.
Cool backpack.
Before this can get any more awkward, Kruskog, you are alerted that your crew has arrived. And so basically you're made known that you can go out and kind of greet them and guide them to where they need to be.
I shall do so. I'm assuming as a palatial estate as Vale Organa has, there's probably a little bit of a courtyard where everybody's kind of trying to find their way in, or at least some area in which people are entering the main entrance. And I will.
Yeah,
I
it's like Disney. Like, the landing pad is the parking lot. Then there's like the courtyard, which is like the little, you know, ticket area. And then you go on into the actual.
Do we?
Yeah. The actual palace.
Oh, Kruskog is playing butler right now.
Do we meet?
Kind of. Yeah.
Do we meet his daughter? Does he have a daughter? Does he have a daughter yet? No, seriously, like, Organa, like, isn't Leia with them at this point?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Kruskog's daughter. I was like,
no, I'm just curious. Excuse me. I'm just curious if there's any Leia cameo.
Not yet.
Okay.
Don't get ahead of me.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Stepping on his toes.
I was trying to play like
bug.
I didn't know what you were talking about. I was like, come on, let me just.
Well, where's Kruskog's illegitimate daughter? Dan Marino.
The gestation period of Zabrak children is apparently much more fast.
No,
and I can assure you that Wade Boggs is very much alive.
No, Kruskog will meet them all in the courtyard and will give a courteous greeting to everybody. I assume as Groz looks friendly, he will give a firm handshake and lightly be drawn in the same way. And Groz
still doesn't fully understand how the Jedi work, especially Kruskog. Like, he could kind of get a bead on Krayt and Sigurd. They're the hero type. Kruskog, he doesn't get. So you can see him, like, try to, is it like a hug? Is it a hand? And then you see him eventually just go,
Namaste.
Namaste.
And he just walks away.
Kruskog was going to offer him a hug, but just smiles and chuckles to himself because the boy doesn't get it. It's okay. A handshake to Iris. A subtle look of concern toward Harani. He's very happy to see you, and he will tell you as much that I'm happy you've come to join us. I'm pleased to see you well.
Harani has a question for him.
Yeah.
She pulls out her lightsaber and ignites it and says, "How do you make this longer?"
There's enough like traffic around for the record of just like little, you know, people scurrying about in their refueling ships and stuff that when that thing goes on, you hear the like the silence just fall.
And it's red too. Area. And it's red.
Yeah. So. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's at least one like, like gasp. And then they kind of look at Kruskog and look at you and look at him like, what do we do? What should we do here?
I'm going to kind of look at her and be like, you want to put that away for now?
Kruskog extends his hand and says, in due time, we may discuss these things.
That's what she does. Just a.
Okay. Kruskog, it is the unfortunate pleasure for you to receive the news that it is only Sigurd who has not responded to the call. And so it is not clear where he is still at this point. Yeah. At this point in time, that information also becomes, he's at the jazz festival. That information also becomes apparent to the rest of you without having to play all that out. It's spread throughout the conversation that Sigurd is the only one who didn't respond to the call. For what reason, it's not known. Slowly but surely, the information comes out that none of you have heard or seen him since the resurgence was destroyed.
Yeah, I will share for the group while that conversation goes on that what little I know, that I can sense he is still among us. He is not turned in any form or fashion, but that he wishes himself not to be known currently, and that if he wishes to do so, there's little we can do to absolve that.
Harani scoffs quietly to herself and just kind of mumbles, a Jedi not showing up to help. There's something new.
Quick glance, bit of a dirty one from Kruskog to Harani. He'll say nothing, but he will remember this.
Damn it, don't you tell me.
In due time, everyone makes their way to, as Kruskog alluded to, sort of a courtyard. It's kind of an open air office, basically. It's pretty palatial. There's lots of greenery and such around. It's a beautiful location. And once everyone is seated and comfortable, Organa makes his way in, flanked by a couple of basically royal guards, pretty much. Obviously, he turns and waves them off, sends them aside. Once the area is clear of anyone except for all of you, he drops the pretense, the smile comes out, and he gives, you know, not curt handshakes, but very professional handshakes to everyone, Harani included, despite the fact that they are at odds. He's professional. Again, he knows what he's working with, and he knows what he needs to that they both kind of need something from each other in a way. And so, you know, he maintains that level of professionalism.
Same, because she does respect him.
Yeah.
She respects Bail Organa.
After a moment, he mentions that, at first he gets into a greeting and says, you know, my friends, it is good for us to all be together once again. I am glad you are all here. Obviously, it has taken some time, but through, and he now indicates Iris, through the masterwork of one of your own, I believe that we have our best lead in months. I believe that we have found Master Denia's whereabouts. At that, there is, of course, a standard sort of holo projector in the midst of the circle of seating, and he activates it, which creates a quick flickering, hovering image of a planet. And he goes on and says, "This is Praketh, a fortress world in the deep core. The Inquisitorius uses it as a base of operations, and my sources, based on Iris's information, indicate that Inquisitor Draco brought Master Denia here after the destruction of the Resurgence. Now, if the past is any indication, Draco will try to break her. It's only a matter of time." Instead of the image zooming in, it actually zooms out, not to show you anything closer on the planet, but the area in which it's located in the deep core. You can see now that it is one world in a very tight cluster of stars, and they are countless. He says, "The deep core is almost impossible to travel to without recent astrogational data. Only ships with proper clearance can download that, and even worse, the Empire is heavily patrolling all of these space lanes." He indicates a ton, which light up. Only ships with the proper clearance codes are allowed to pass through that area. Unfortunately, getting that clearance requires an extensive background check by Imperial Intelligence, and in your case, let's just say that a death mark would catch their attention. But even without that mark, it could take months, and that is time that Denia does not have. He pauses for a moment to indicate that he's willing to answer any questions you have at this point before he goes on.
Do we have any chances at all in obtaining these codes to make this happen, or have we just hit a brick wall again?
He says it's interesting that you would bring that right up. He says, due to its astrography, that's hard to say, the Deep Core has a very limited number of viable hyperspace routes in and out. A ship's captain can't get those charts without proper clearance, as I mentioned, and since the routes are so limited in number, they're easily patrolled. Plotting a new chart could take weeks, even months, even under the best of circumstances, because the stars are so clustered so tightly together, that process would be even slower, and the chances of catastrophic failure are much, much higher. For the first time, he's a little bit jovial and indicates to Harani, and I don't think you want that pretty ship of yours going that way. In terms of any other ways of getting there, he says seats fill up quickly on any sort of transport. That would take weeks and months to get there in terms of getting clearance. That wouldn't get you caught. It's tough to find somebody willing to risk carrying high-profile fugitives in or out of the Deep Core. But I have found one good lead. Now the holoprojector changes to another image. And actually, I can give you this image. Give me just a second here. I thought I had it closer than that, and I don't. We'll go to the Discord and text here. Shannon, that's the one that's easier for you to see, right?
Yeah. Okay. No better.
Sorry. Alderaanian American. No better.
Yeah. Right. Speaking in their language.
Okay. The holoprojector brings up the image that I just dropped into the Discord text there, so hopefully the folks at home can see it as well.
No,
it's
they
a stunning young woman,
but I'm going to save okay, it so well, they can see it.
I'll give you the description as it reads here. She's a stunning young woman in a luxurious but revealing gown, and Bale says, this is Lady Alia Aldreet, the heiress to the Aldreet family empire of luxury hotels, casinos, passenger liners, and other playgrounds for the idle rich. There's a little contempt in his voice with this. He says, now Alia herself uses her family name and fortune to pursue a life of decadence and excess, making her into a celebrity and icon while the gossip media watches her every move. Once again, he indicates Irani and says, sound vaguely familiar? He says, this, of course, is a problem for us because I need you to meet her. I have reason to believe that among her other contacts, Lady Aldreet has a cadre of personal smugglers who ferry illegal spice, stolen artwork, illicit luxuries, anything they can get their hands on. Every indication is she has access to several clearance codes that would provide authorization for travel in the Deep Core. If Denia is to have any hope of rescue and we're to make any further moves on the Sarlacc project, we need to talk Alia into helping us. Now, her love of media attention is going to make this difficult. We can't have you being recorded speaking with her. You're going to attract scrutiny, and it would take, or would not take, an investigative reporter long to discover your status as wanted criminals. But we do have a unique opportunity to get close to her without being surrounded by recording devices. The Gem of Alderaan, a luxury repulsor train, and now he brings up an image of this as well. It's exactly what you're expecting. If you've seen Solo, the train that that transports that they're moving at that time? I can't think of the name of the thing, but that's a cargo train. It's that, but way more luxurious. Yeah, there you go. It's that, but way more luxurious. It's meant as, a luxury, train. It's owned by her family, and it's going to be launched on its maiden voyage tomorrow night. Now, Alia's holding an invitation-only launch party. That would give you access to speak with her without attracting undue attention. And as a senator, my office is routinely sent invitations to these things as a matter of courtesy. I'm giving you the invitations so you can appear on my behalf, disguised as advisors and aides for my Senate office. Now, this party, this gala, is certain to have a significant imperial presence. You're going to have to go in with little more than the clothes on your backs, and you will not have much time to build a respectable cover story to ensure that security doesn't hassle you. once you get on board and he starts bringing up not schematics so much of the train, but just like rotating images of what the promotional images have been for it. They're exactly as not gaudy as you would expect, but this is like if Trump had a train, like old Trump had it, that's what it would be. It's that thing. It's way over the top. He says, once you're on board, you can expect Lady Aldrete to be surrounded by a gaggle of hangers on all the time. And our topic absolutely cannot be brought up in front of witnesses. And she's unlikely to grant an audience to total strangers. So you're going to have to attract her interest so she'll extend an invitation to you. The best way to do that, of course, will be befriending or impressing as many of the guests as possible. Get them talking to you, and eventually she'll seek you out. He once again pauses in case there's anything to drop in at that moment, waiting to see if everything has processed.
Does Harani know this person, like, through her inner circles?
You all have a vague knowledge of this person, but she really has climbed to prominence in the past year or so. Almost, in a way, Harani would assume that she kind of created a power vacuum herself when she left the limelight, and that opened it for another similar type person. And while Lady Aldrete is not the vlogger, online persona that Harani may have once been, they do fill similar gaps. It's Paris Hilton to Kim Kardashian. It's similar type stuff, basically. Would know her, but not on a personal level.
Which one do you consider Harani to be, Paris Hilton or Kim Kardashian? Which,
realistically, based on their description, she's more of a Kim Kardashian. But if you go chronologically, she would have to be Paris because she came first.
That's true.
But anyway. That's the closest description I've got that I can go with on that. So she would be aware of her. They probably have never met or talked face to face.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else?
Well, Harani's she just knows this is a bad idea for her because there is no way no one is going to recognize her. Not only because of her fame before all this, but for the past 6 months, I don't think Harani's going to be sneaking around anywhere, even with... they better have a damn good disguise. It better be that disguise from the old Ninja Turtles cartoon where she's just a bald man. That's the only way it's going to work.
The mention of any version of this to Organa draws a little bit of a smirk, and he once again indicates Iris and says, that's why you have a master spy.
You're up.
Yeah.
Organa then says, you're going to have a very limited amount of time, all of you, to prepare your backgrounds and learn about the guests well enough to blend in with these nobles, politicians, celebrities, and probably most importantly, Imperials, in close quarters on a luxury train, all while having to still make a good impression and attracting the attention of a flighty celebrity so you can ask her in private to provide proper codes for illegally infiltrating the Deep Core. It gives a little pause and then just says, any questions?
I'm good.
Yes, several.
Are these other guests more locally or from far all over the place?
Organa says the launch of the Gem of Alderaan, I'll get it right in a minute, is a major event, so you can find press releases and news items on those in attendance. That should be plenty easy enough for you or Harani. I would suggest you start by searching local computer networks and the news feeds. The thing is happening in less than 24 hours at this point, so many guests have already arrived on planet. You might be able to pick up some names by asking around, especially in the lounges of the upscale hotels in Aldera.
I can do that.
You can expect security to be very tight. Other than simple common devices, your comm links, credit chips, data pads, and the like, do not expect to be able to bring any significant tools or equipment. It's going to be very difficult to smuggle all but the smallest and simplest of weapons, if at all, on board.
I got a hold of that team.
What are you grinding your teeth for there?
I don't think she's going to step foot on this. She's going to leave it up to you guys. She's going to be hanging back in the coterie. Maybe she'll give you guys coaching on how to be noble and how to fit in with these people because she is good at that.
Send your new friend with us.
He's an Imperial agent who's now, I don't know, Hunter, at this point, would you
say? He's been made, man.
Yeah, he's
oh, yeah, he's long since been made.
He's not actually at this meeting either. He's back on the coterie. He does not like to be seen.
Fair yeah.
enough. No, I'm surprised Graz is going to go. If not for the fact that Imperials think all Wookiees look alike, Graz would not be able to go either. But Imperials are racist as shit.
I am aware.
Organa says, whatever aliases that you pick for yourselves, my office can create basic matching IDs that show you to be senatorial aides in my office and an on-site dormitory. All of this will pass casual inspection. It will not pass a check of electronic records, as you know, are a lot more difficult to falsify. So it would be best if you could fabricate a bit of history and plant some records that make you seem legitimate. At any mention that anybody might not be prepared to go aboard the train, he makes it very clear that this is going to be a one and done situation, that while he understands that some of you are, and again, with a very terse eye toward Harani, some of you are more brazen than others lately, that if you aren't there, you will not be able to step in at a later point in time, meaning that anyone not present is putting the rest of the group in danger.
Well, I guess Harani's going to go back to her pretending to be another guy. I don't remember what the guy she pretended to be his name was at this point.
Oh, I forgot
that. Yeah, remember that? Like, yeah. Name. Very beginning, yeah, when yeah. she was pretending to be a dude.
I bet if you go back and look at the descriptions, like the text yeah. descriptions for those first few episodes, we used that name there. That would be the probably fastest way.
I haven't unpacked
way,
my notebook.
Because I don't have it written down.
Yeah. And hey, if for you listeners out there, if you're curious about it, go back and listen to the Dawn of Defiance yeah, episodes from episode one on. It's a good story.
Yeah. This is a good time to get to that, too, because assuming that there are no further questions, Organa stands up, gestures toward all of you, and says, you have 24 hours. Get to work. And that's where we're going to end it for tonight.
Ooh, awesome. Buddy. Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm calling Kiefer yeah. Sutherland.
Oi.
It's a high... I can see, like... I know Harani is no longer in this world in a lot of ways, but after that casino job way back on Bespin, I could see as this was happening, the fucking, what do you call it?
Wheels?
Slot gears. Machine. Oh. Roll and turn and going, H-E-I-S-T, heist. It's a heist.
Yeah, I'm thinking, heist. Is it going to be worth our effort to grease some palms to, like, stick our aliases names in
you will have ample time to do so. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking we may do a couple of things off show over the next week that we can kind of do on the side, and then when the show begins next week, we can briefly recap those so that we start with you immediately in your new personas, in the aliases that you come up with for yourselves. I am so excited to see how you guys make Graz not look like a Wookiee. or at least not look like himself.
Okay. What does it look like if a Wookiee gets shaved?
No.
See, you went that. I was going to mean,
you remember when the Ninja Turtles had those balls?
Can we
man?
Maybe like, braid him?
Braid him. Make him look like.
Braid him up.
Make him look a little more kept.
So
make him look
so
like Kyrgyz and Rinden
into the neck of his fur, like right here.
See, you went with the Ninja Turtles bald guy. I was gonna immediately go, we can get this guy a trench coat and a hat. He's fine. Give him a Jose Canseco bat. He'll blend in New York. Tell me he didn't pay money for it. Right. Don't worry.
I'm sending a picture. I looked up shaved Wookiee. I'm sending a picture into the
no.
chat.
No.
Yeah.
I'm terrified.
No.
Ew.
No.
I'm no.
All right. Well, I got to go pour some Clorox into my eyeballs.
Don't do that, Graz. Please, no.
Guys, thank you all, as always, so much for tuning in. It is so good to be back here on PZ85 Plays, back in the running once again. We will be back next week at this time. Once again, we'll start it right up at 8, if not sooner. As always, we're usually on right around 8, 8:30, somewhere between maybe 7:30. We hope to have the Big T back. We'll see what Sigurd has been up to all this time. Be sure to tune in for the rest of the week. As Shannon mentioned earlier, we got Pro Wrestling Unscripted. Hopefully, tomorrow night, a whole bunch of stuff coming out, all out this past... All out? All in? It was all out, right?
All out, yeah.
I hate that they have two named there, so named similar, I can never remember. It's All Out. Of course, CM Punk's first match back and the big revelations at the end of the show. Huge new signings for AEW. And I'm sure WWE, I don't know, fired somebody else because they're idiots. Thursday night, it's After Dark. Lindsay, what's the topic for this week? And is it, and why is it the Pokemon thing we talked about a while back ago?
People are going to need more notice for that one to actually like go through and get the numbers, but we will do it. That at some it's point. Done. I know you did. Shannon's is easy because he literally has the exact same bored. Number of polls as me. I'm thinking Justin and Shelby. Simple. Yeah.
Who?
What?
They're sleeping. Don't worry about it. They're taking a nap. It's fine. What else is on After Dark this week, Shannon? Anything at this point?
Well, you know, I still struggle with the concept of After Dark because on the one hand, I want to have fun. On the other hand, nothing's fun anymore. So,
it's not.
If we're pulling from the news, man, I don't know. I haven't kept up with the news much lately. I know COVID is surging. I know Texas just signed in some new laws that made voting a lot harder. So I'm sure.
Oh yeah, that's what they need is more problematic laws.
Yeah,
we
can touch on a bunch of things on Thursday, but I'll twist everybody and try to keep it like completely happy and lighthearted. We'll see.
I'll come up with something.
And then, please, yes. And then Friday night, Cody. He wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, he is.
He doesn't know. He did know. It's horse time.
It's horse time.
Friday night, we'll get on here. And do silly things and talk about horses of the past.
The present
and the future.
Future horses to come. All right. Guys, thank you once again for tuning in. Be sure to check out. Don't go to Podzilla1985.com. It's falling apart. It's bad. Just keep listening to the show wherever. Watching it here, that's the best. Again, once we get into things that require the map, this is the best way to do it because you can see Roll 20 right here.
Facebook,
as it's going on. Thank you for tuning in.
Facebook.com/Podzilla1985.
We said it at the same time, and that probably was annoying to the people. Anyway,
say it again.
You say it.
Facebook.com/Podzilla1985.
There you go. And we're back next Tuesday night for another edition of the Star Wars Dawn of Defiance campaign. Episode 8, The Gem of Alderaan, is officially off and running. This train is going to leave the station. We will see you here then. Until Tuesday, for Shannon, for Lindsay, and for Cody, I am your Game Master Double H. May the Force be with you, and we'll see you then. Later.
Help.